Well, Marco, since you make the big bucks as the director of officiating, if you'd like to help send one of the misfits to Providence, we're fundraising right now for the low price of $330.
Yesterday you talked to the big bucks guy, so if he doesn't give you money, I don't know what I can do for you guys. So
all right, I'll send the link to Perry to send to both of you then. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we'll get right on that.
Tech Hockey Guide presents the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA with your host, Tim Brown, Rob Gilreath, Dustin Lindstrom, and Matt Cavender.
Welcome to episode 51 of season 5 of the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide and recorded from the state of hockey. I'm Tim Brown, your host, and I'm joined this week by Dustin Lindstrom.
Hey, everyone.
And Rob Gilreath.
Hey, guys.
The CCHA season is over, and Michigan Tech is the only team still alive. Throughout the season, there were some controversial calls, at least as far as fans and media were concerned. So we reached out to the director of officiating for the CCHA, Marco Hunt, to see if we could get some insight into some of the high-profile calls. Thanks for joining us again, Marco.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
This week, we'll ask some Patreon questions, discuss the CCHA semifinal game between Tech and Minnesota State for sure. We'll talk about the status of the CCHA officiating and discuss some of the other calls throughout college hockey to try and get a better understanding of the rules. Anything else, guys? Pretty much it, Dustin?
No, I think
Rob's
that's about it.
Walking around in his hotel in Utah. All right.
I got you in my ears. I can hear you.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back with the director of officiating, Marco Hunt, after a little thank you notes and a brief note from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fibke Dental is a general dentistry practice located in downtown Rhinelander, Wisconsin, home of the Hodag. Look online at FibkeDental.com or find them on Facebook. They do pain-free dentistry for kids, adults, people that went to great schools, and people that ended up at Northern Michigan. Stop in and say hi between 8 and 5 and tell them THG sent you. That is F-I-E-B-K-E Dental.com.
Do you work in manufacturing, product design, or product development? Is your business trying to improve efficiency while also producing at scale? Livonia Technical Services can help. They provide world-class quality improvement training and consulting for failure modes and effect analysis, product development, and cost reduction. All things that could help Northern Michigan assemble a competent defense. If you think your business could use a prevention mindset and reduce manufacturing costs, a partnership with Livonia Technical Services might be right for you. Check them out at livoniatech.net. That's LIVONIA tech.net.
All right, welcome back. Marco, let's start with your thoughts on how the officiating went for the league this season and the West in general, since the three Western conferences were kind of sharing referees this year.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, guys? Good to see you guys again. And thanks for having me on. I'll do my best to answer your questions. as best I can here, but well, the officiating is kind of an imperfect science, as you guys are well aware. But to answer your question, overall, I think things went really, really well. I think that coming into the season, being my first season, I had an idea, I had a plan in place, and that plan was to use officials that were available that were mainly working in other conferences and all. I think we talked about this in the fall, that was being done a little bit, but not at the length that we did it this year. And as a matter of fact, we used three referees in the first round of our playoffs that went on to work NCHC playoffs the following weekend. And then two of those three moved on to the Frozen Faceoff. So it went well. And what that did for us is it just allowed us to have a little bit more depth. and a little bit more experience. And that just made our younger, less experienced officials better. They just got better throughout the year. I could tell by watching what I was seeing. And so overall, I think things, well, I mean, we had hiccups here and there. It's not, like I said earlier, it's not a perfect science. But overall, I think things went really well.
Is that why the two guys that reffed the Tech semifinal and final reffed with different guys in the quarterfinals?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's at this point, you know, the old partnering up with people is not really in play that much. I know that, you know, Greg Shepard partnered Derek and I together pretty much all the time. And I think that's a rarity more than anything. I think our guys and the system of the two referees and two linesmen allows you to plug and play a little bit more. So it's not necessarily a crew, even though our crews moved on from the semis to the final. I just felt like with who was available for me and who did the, you know, I wouldn't say the best job, but who had the toughest situations to, you know, perform the best and then just move them on and then just tried to make the most solid crew that I could with the remaining eight officials.
Okay.
So that's how it worked. It wasn't really that much thought into it other than that.
How do you arrive at the eight guys that reffed the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I'm not going to divulge my secret sauce to you guys on that. But, no, it's really just a performance based. It's experience. It's who handles the big situations the best, and that's what we really focus on as supervisors. Is you know, you can miss a penalty or trip or something in the first period, but when you call, you know, something that's not there late in the game or in a big situation, or you don't call some big minor major penalty. Those are big moments, right? Those are opportunities that you can't miss. And it's really an evaluation process throughout the year and throughout year after year after year of seeing these guys and know who you can trust and who you can't in those situations. And, you know, we've always tried to mix new people in because you gain experience through those games. And so the more people we can get into a playoff scenario or a big game down the stretch, big series, then they get more comfortable in those settings and they're working with more qualified officials and then they become better. And so, yeah, it's a work in progress, but it's really, really who handles the moments the best that when it comes down to it.
Okay. And the, to kind of follow up on that, are any CCHA officials getting an assignment this coming week? Or
yeah, backups? We have one crew that's advancing to Sioux Falls. We had two crews that were submitted. I submitted quite a few of our officials to the NCAA for consideration. But when it comes down to, there's a lot in play. There's conference affiliation, which you need to be aware of. So none of our guys can work CCHA teams. You know, there being only one, I thought that we would have a good chance of having more than one crew in the NCAA tournament. But we have, you know, officials that were submitted that have conflicts with being alumni from different schools, having affiliations with other conferences. And so I wouldn't say I'm thrilled that we only got one crew, but I'm happy for the one crew that is going because their experience, they did a great job during the playoffs. And I feel like they have a pretty good chance to advance the Frozen Four as well. So, but we only had one crew, but I'm happy about the crew we got.
Cool.
Well, you said we were overlapping with the NCHC and we're overlapping with, you know, the Big Ten, right? So is that what causes some of the trouble, if you will, with the scheduling then?
Yeah, not as much that, Rob. It's so you have to work 15 conference games to be considered a official of that conference. Okay, and gotcha. I'm talking conference games. So it's not even Augustana. It's flat out conference games. And that goes for any conference. So that part of it doesn't really play into the selections at all. It's mainly, you know, one of our officials has a son that has a son on one of the teams in the conference or in the tournament. So he's been eligible to work that team. We have another official that was probably going to be selected that has a degree from Michigan and Michigan State. So those two teams are out. We have another one that went to the University of Minnesota. So it's really kind of a crapshoot when it comes to that. I mean, you know, one of the times that the one time I got to work the national championship game, everything just kind of fell into place. And that was 2009. I think we talked about that last time, but you know, Bemidji State was in that tournament. And if Bemidji State would have beat Miami in the semis, then I wouldn't have worked at all. But they got beat and I was able to work the championship. So, I mean, that's how it works. And really try to tell our officials that it's, you know, get yourself to this point. But after this point, it's really a crapshoot is whether you're going to get into a game or not, because it's really out of your control. And it's more a conference and any kind of neutrality. I read something about they pulled a basketball official over the weekend from a game because they found out that they had a doctorate from the college or something like that. And they pulled that official at halftime and brought the backup official in.
Yeah, so sure.
NCAA likes to cover themselves a little bit, overthinks it quite a bit in my, you know, my opinion, but it is what it is. And, you know, you just have to follow the rules.
Talked about this before when like, or not maybe on the podcast, but I know Dustin and I have talked about it before, where sometimes like to not show that you're biased, sometimes refs overcorrect, or at least the perception could be that they're overcorrecting because they have some connection to some school or something. So it's best to just not do it at all, I guess, right?
Yeah, and you know, really that's kind of what it is, right? It's like, it could be a million things. And again, and when you have a built-in conflict, then the only scenario that you come out is if nothing happens. So if the game goes perfectly, then you're great. And even in that case, the NCAA used 1 year ago, Mike Schmidt refereed with two linesmen from out east in the Frozen Four, and they did North Dakota, and the game went off without a hitch. It was perfectly played, no controversy, nothing. But the coaches still didn't like that conference affiliation, so the neutrality, so that they voted it out. And I think that was back in the late 90s to early 2000s, and that's how long that was, and it's still this way.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just a matter of making sure there's no perception of wrongdoing and honestly protecting the refs themselves from any grumpiness that may come no matter what you do, because everybody's always looking to point a finger somewhere in some way.
They are. Yep, they are. They are looking to point a finger. I mean, we could do another podcast on how ridiculous that is, but, you know, it is what it is. And avoiding controversy is NCAA's number one concern, which you can't argue with it too much.
Yeah, I mean, just look at how much complaining we had about the officials before the final and the semifinals. Just as soon as we found out who they were, right? Like, let them ref. Like, they're there for a reason, and they are human. Like, I think that's the other thing we talked a lot about on here is like, they're human. Like, just because you can see it on 1080p at one quarter of the speed doesn't mean they could. And I guess we might as well ask
I'll point the finger at our listener base right away. You got a bunch of guys that can barely skate criticizing a bunch of people for not catching guys on skates that are keeping up with college athletes as aging folks, right? I mean, I was more than happy when my soccer league got to be an over 30 league, so I didn't have to keep up, right? You know, you got guys repping that are keeping up with D1 athletes. That's good work.
Yeah, I think And if I go off on a tangent, you guys just got me off. But it's
no worries. That's what we're here for, Marco.
replay is really changed the game as far as officiating goes. And you know, I was watching the Wild game the other night, and there was a play that happened, and the announcers didn't say anything about it. And then, of course, when they replayed it, there was like an elbow to the back of the head or something on the play. And they're like, oh, I can't believe the two referees missed that one. I'm like, well, you missed it. You didn't say anything.
Right, of course.
First time, right? You know, so it's
exactly.
It happens fast. We unfortunately, the toothpaste is already out of the tube on that. So you've got technology. You're able to slow it down. You're able to do that. And it just over exemplifies, you know, the error that is made. And there are errors made all the time. These guys, like you said, they're trying to keep up with world-class athletes, and trying to make split decisions on the fly. Now we have a replay in place, but again, replay, and I can't stress this enough, replay is there to reverse an egregious error by an official. It's not there to re-officiate a play. So when you see something, you know, and you have to get it down to the point where, you know, you're stopping it on the whatever happened, and then you still have doubts on it. That's not what replay was put in place for. Replay was, again, to, you know, to overturn, you know, like, you know, if a goal didn't go across the line completely, or it was high sticked in it, or it was gloved in, or, you know, something like that, where it was obvious as soon as you went in there, like, oh, I missed that one. Let's reverse it. So now we've gotten to the point where we're re-officiating it. And then a lot of our coaches want to re-officiate it throughout the week as well, and say, well, why wasn't this called? Why wasn't that called? And it's really not what it was for. And so it's difficult, but it's out there, and replay's never going back. We're probably going to get more of it, but we just have to kind of live with it. But what we do is we try to, you know, and we covered this, I remember, the last time I was on, you know, we try to give the guys, you know, the most tools they can have and the procedures in place to make those calls. And we've had a couple this year where I sent it around to a bunch of the supervisors and they come back with a different answer. Yeah. So at that point, you know, what do you do? It's like, you know, I remember Steve Petrowski put up a picture at camp one year. And I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's an old picture, and it's like, it's an image, but some people think it looks like a duck and some people think it looks like a rabbit.
Yep, I know you're talking about that.
So half the people think it one way and half the, so that's really an exercise to understand that we all see things differently when we see it for the first time. And again, we're not there to re-officiate the play on replay. We just got to let it go. And I think once if we ever could get back to that, that would be great. But you know, it's my doubt that we can get to that point. And you know, fans are fans. They're fanatics, right? So they're going to see it their way. Yep. And we understand that as officials. I mean, we're in this. So we understand what we got into with it. But, you know, in the same regard, it's, you know, we just would like it to be treated a little bit more fairly, if that's a term even. But it's a difficult thing to handle. It really is. It makes it hard. And our guys just do the best they can. They really do.
So from you talk about replay and all that stuff. How much do you appreciate the fact that the NCAA seems to be attempting to put more and more of the replay calls, the burden on the coaches? Because I do think one of the things that has been frustrating is feeling like certain coaches were better at convincing referees to review it without a challenge.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I personally would like to see everything a challenge like it is in the NHL. And I would like to see it a minor penalty if it wasn't. We give them the out with the timeout. But there's been a couple occasions this year where that they had their timeout used already and they still challenged and lost. You know what? Our guys have done a really good job of this year. I mean, a really good job is calming the coaches down at the bench level and explaining to them what they need to see when they go into the replay booth to overturn it. You know, for example, if you want to talk about the kick-in goal, because I'm sure you guys want to get to that one.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear about that one.
So in that regard, and we can dive into that more if you want, but when the call was made, you know, the referee went over to Mankato or Minnesota State's bench. I keep saying Mankato. I'm getting in trouble every time I say it. the Maverick bench and said, you know, listen, so to get into the rule is that there has to be a distinct kicking motion, right? So what is a distinct kicking motion? That's up to interpretation, right?
Yeah, we lawyer argued the crap out of that ourselves too, trying to figure out what it meant.
And the italic note underneath it about propelling the puck. That was the other part we really dug into.
Yeah, so the energy of the puck needs to be achieved by the kick. If that makes sense.
That's a really good way to explain it, I think. And that would change my mind completely on how I feel about the kicking motion.
Yeah. There's a lot of what
I felt it shouldn't have been a goal myself.
You want me to be honest? I would have called it a kick in. I really would have.
That's and what I would have done too.
What else? Mm-hmm. But so I don't want to get too far off from my point, but the so what the officials did is they explained to the coaches that I have a deflection in the net off the skate without the skate leaving the ice and not kicked in. So I have to go over to the replay booth and see something different than I saw on the ice, or the call is going to stand. And so that's perfect communication in my regard. So that's what I want them to know. Now, they did not see anything different than they saw on the ice. And I did send this around to a bunch of different people all over the country. And I got about a 50-50 response on it. You know, some of them thought it was a deflected in. Some of them thought it was kicked more than a flexion. And that is a play that is open for, you know, for interpretation from an official. And what the officials called was well within the rules. So that you could be a Minnesota State fan and say you're crazy. But you guys as Tech fans would say, you know, most people would say, well, that was just a good skilled hockey play, which it kind of was. I mean, that's what, you know, they put it in the rules so you could make a play. I mean, if you look at that play and break it down, the kid's a left-handed shot, the puck comes to his right, and he's able to deflect that puck in the net. And the energy from that puck came from the pass. It didn't come from the kick. So when you think kick, like the puck stopped and you're kicking it into the net, that's the interpretation that we've given. That's what the interpretation that the officials used on that call. And they came up with their decision well within the rules and stuck by it. Replay didn't change their mind. So that's what I mean. I mean, if you go to replay and you see that play and then you start to second guess yourself, like, well, okay, well, what did I do? That's not what it's for. And it was a huge call in a huge moment, turned the game around. And so I get all that. But it was a call that was somebody was going to be mad about it regardless. And it's just one of those 50-50 plays, I think. And, you know, I could get roasted for that take on it, but I, as the director of officiating, my guys did it right. Yeah. And I will back them up on it. Even though, like I admitted before, I would have probably called that a kick, but I haven't been on the ice for 8 years. So, you know, there's a reason for that.
Well, and I do think that
leg swings haven't changed in 8 years. That was still a kick.
Well, that wasn't a leg swing, right? So,
yeah. We talked about this last week when we talked about it a bit. Is I play soccer. That's the sport that's my playing sport, right? Mm-hmm. That's exactly the kind of kicking motion I would make to deflect the ball or kick a ball. So, my definition kind of comes with a little bit of crossover there. When as soon as it went in, my seats that I have for that game are right up, you know, a couple rows up from that right where it happened. I wasn't even celebrating. I was telling my dad this is going to be reviewed and it's getting called back. It was a kick, like what I saw live. Yeah. I was really surprised to hear it be stand as a goal. And it's just a rule that it needs some work to make it so that there can't be that much vagueness in it, because I totally see both sides and both arguments to it with how it's written.
Rob, I think the point is that there is vagueness in there just so that you give the referees the ability to, you know, they need to be able to interpret it themselves, right? Every play is different, and every play is going to have little nuances that are different. And you got to trust the officials to be able to interpret the rule correctly for the exact situation, I think.
I think the rule shouldn't have that grayness. The ref should be able to be interpreting rules. I'm fine with that, but having that much doubt on you, we shouldn't have to go to lawyer speak to figure out what a kick is, right?
That's just the way it is. I know you're not an NFL football fan, but how many times have we heard like football
is a catch? What is a catch?
How many people complain about that's the problem? What is a catch in the NFL?
if the NFL can't,
but it doesn't hurt them making billions of dollars, Rob.
Well, I get it, guys. What we don't want to happen is you got a guy, you know, that comes crashing into the net and, you know, the puck's in the crease and he doesn't have any way to get to the puck with a stick and he just kicks it in.
Yeah.
That's what we don't want. This play in particular, I don't think everybody's clamoring like we shouldn't allow this type of play in hockey. Right. I think everybody that's ever played or watched this game can understand that was pretty skilled to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So why not allow that goal? Now that doesn't, that doesn't change the rule right now, but that was the onus of making the rule as vague as it was, is that we really don't want the puck actually kicked into the net. We're going to allow it to be directed into the net. And, you know, that's where the debate on that play comes in, is whether it was, you know, it was, you know, a soccer one-timer in the net, or if it was a deflection. And I think if you polled everybody, I think you'd get a 50-50 on that one.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it is.
And
it
I think that's a fair assessment of the play, too. I mean, it's tough to tell.
It's really hard to tell whether or not, like, the puck gains momentum from the deflection. And that's the piece we're talking about, right? Because if it moves really slowly to him and then he kicks it in and it's suddenly moving faster, that's what you're trying to get out of the game. But what he did, I think we all agree, should be a goal, but some of us wonder whether or not the rule should be interpreted in a way that actually is one, the way the rule's currently written. But yeah, and I think what you have said is basically the reading of the rule that I took as to why they called it a goal. So I mean, that fits. So that's good.
There's a video that was sent out by the NHL that goes through all of these, and there was one particular play that was very similar to this one and was called a goal. And that's you know, that's the, you know, our rule does mirror that rule. So, you know, so I mean, your point is exactly, it will be discussed, let me put it that way. You know, there's always a couple of plays during the year that really garner a lot of conversation at rules meetings. And that one will definitely be brought up, and then we'll run it at camp next year and see what the exercise comes up with too.
We fund everything a Tech Hockey Guide from listeners like you. You can show your support by becoming a patron at patreon.com/techhockeyguide. Whether you're interested in question priority, access to patron-only Zoom chats with coaches and players, in-stat deep dives, extended versions of the podcast, unedited video or audio, early access, or commercial-free listening, there's a level for you. We also now have 15% discounts off annual memberships with tiers ranging from $2 to $50 per month. Again, sign up at patreon.com/techhockeyguide. Are you in the market for insurance? Have your rates for home, auto, boat, or more been increasing way beyond inflation? If so, maybe it's time you spoke with Aaron Pietola and the team at Arcadia Insurance Group, serving Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and more. Who better to serve you than a former Michigan Tech player? For more information, call 866-511-1069 or go to arcadiaagency.com. So when is a goal automatically awarded on a penalty with your goalie pulled?
Yeah, so if it's a clear path with no defender and you're followed from behind on that one, then it would normally be a penalty shot, even if the goaltender was in. That's when it's an awarded goal. So what's confusing about it is that it is not a penalty shot. It's an awarded goal. So it is a penalty for hooking, tripping, or whatever it is. And then, so that person, you know, so the goal is counted and you'd have to serve the penalty. So on a penalty shot, that's the penalty, right? So if you score on a penalty shot, you still don't have to serve the penalty. So but it's in the rule book two different times.
Yeah,
possibly. Yeah, except for the penalty shot. And so, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense either, right? So, it's in the rule book two different ways. But it doesn't need to be in there twice. And, you know, Jeff Fulton's the secretary of rules. He's got that set to be changed out next year. So,
and he's going to add an end to the end of Motio in the propulsion of the puck rule.
Yeah, only you guys would catch that one.
Well, we stared at it long enough. So yeah,
right. There was a lot of arguments about that one in both directions, like we were talking about, right? So that got notice of, oh, there's an end missing.
So the rule book does mention cases where you can have a penalty on the team with their goalie pulled and the goalie would get to come back for a penalty shot. Is that like the only instance I could kind of figure out in my head was if a defender decided to kind of pretend to be goalie and stop the puck and then covered it, is that an instance where a goalie would get to come back to take the penalty shot?
Yeah, that, you know, it could have been like a throwing the stick, but it wasn't a goal scoring opportunity thing. You know, that's a tough one because it's probably not going to happen very often.
Nope.
And that's
like
why,
the exception, you know, to the exception, right? Like,
right. So that, you know, the most of the time that is just an awarded goal.
Okay.
Because it's a penalty shot. It means that they were at a clear path, you know, no defender in front of them, followed from behind. You know, you're just reestablishing a scoring chance at that point.
Okay.
And so it should be an awarded goal in most cases.
So since we're talking penalty shots, we might as well get into the other controversial call in the Minnesota State Michigan Tech semifinal. So the call on the ice was a penalty shot for defender. I think he was number 16 or 18 covering the puck in the crease. And Minnesota State chose not to challenge that. Lots of complaints from the overhead about what fans and such saw. What were your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I don't really think there was, to be honest with you guys, I don't think there was much controversy on that one. That was clear. You can't gather the puck into your hand or body. And if it's a matter of a split second, and I think it's pretty clear that that player gathered the puck. And then he didn't do a very good job of it. But, you know, hand came out, gathered it in. I think the issue becomes, especially with the Minnesota State fans and fan base, is that that particular play happened the previous weekend and was not called a penalty shot. And the difference with this one was, is that the call on the ice, the referee did not call it on the ice. He did not see the player coming in and covering the puck. They challenged that. And when they went in, they could not tell if he actually gathered the puck into his hand or not. And this is another one where I looked at it, you know, probably like you guys. And I said, well, that's a penalty shot. But they followed the protocol. They followed the rules. They didn't make that call on the ice. That's why it's so important to have the call right on the ice, because in the Tech Minnesota State game in the semifinals, the call on the ice was penalty shot. So had they challenged that, they would have come out of there with the same call, because they saw exactly what they did.
And I don't think there's any replay that would give any better view to what happened than where the ref was positioned. He was right on top.
Yeah, he was right on.
He's positioned perfect.
He had
he's
a better view than
climbing.
Anything that's going to be on the camera.
And
yeah, he's when practically climbing the net.
Right, and when the player came sliding in, he saw him gather the puck into his body and immediately called penalty shot. Yeah. So that, I mean, I know that probably doesn't grant a whole lot of solace to the Minnesota State fans, because both those calls kind of went against them. One of them was for them, but they both were Minnesota State defensemen covering the puck in the crease. They got away with one. They didn't get away with the other one.
Okay.
But it does add to confusion. I get it. Like, well, what the hell? What are you guys doing? This is clear. This is the same play. Well, it wasn't called this way. Well, it wasn't called on the ice. Replay is, again, what we talk about, right? It's to overturn an egregious error. So
I definitely think that language seems to be missing from the way the announcers talk about replay, because I don't feel like they talk enough about I just don't think the announcers talk enough about like the kind of language you're saying of like basically we're only changing clear and obvious mistakes to get into a soccer term, Rob, right? Like we're not trying to, like you said, you're not trying to adjudicate the call again based on what you see. You're just trying to say, do I 100% feel like I was wrong? And if that's not the case, we're not overturning it. And I think that's something that's missing from the way the announcers talk about these calls in game.
Yeah, and I agree, Tim, but that brings up like maybe the exception to prove the rule, which is that play that we've been talking about for however many weeks between Penn State and Ohio State that we've looked at, how is that not egregious mistake? And which I think it got overturned via replay, and it's a different league, so I don't know. You maybe didn't even see it, Marco.
Yeah. Well, which play are you talking about?
I think it was the one where the Ohio State player, like the two guys run into each other, and they call a major penalty on one of the guys, even though they're clearly not.
They didn't call it on the ice.
Yeah.
They reviewed it and called the major on the review.
And it looks like neither player is paying attention to where it's like neither of them are trying to contact each other. They're just oblivious to the other guy being there. And one guy falls down and gets hurt, and they call the major on the other guy on review. And it's
the other important part to that is that the guy that is hit is skating into the back of the other guy. The other guy isn't even looking backwards to see him at all. and he skates into him, basically, it looks like.
Yeah, I remember the play, and I will tell you that I don't think the right call was made on that one.
Yeah, that one looks rough.
This is what we get into, and this is what we fight as directors, and we really want to avoid our officials going in and overthinking those calls, right? Because they want to get it right. I mean, they really desperately want to get it right. And so when they go into the box, they're the same as everybody else. They're not understanding sometimes that it's there if you missed something badly, right? It's not there let's re-referee this play, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever you saw on the ice, now if you didn't see anything, and then you got to go with what you saw there on the ice or in the replay. But most of the time they saw something, right? And so we've been fighting this battle, and we stress to our guys, okay, guys, when you're going in there, know what you're reviewing and know what you saw. And again, it's got to take something and you say, oh, you know, it should click like that for you if you miss something. Yeah. So we all want to get it right. Everybody wants it right. And that replay proponents are all saying the same thing. You got to get the call right, right? There's too much on the line. There's too much money being made, too much, livelihood in that. And it's really like you're going to have humans refereeing games. They're going to be errors.
Yeah.
And that is just lost on people. And they can't, even though when we sit around and you talk, on a podcast or you're out, on the around the campfire and that, everybody understands that. They understand there's a human element in it. But when you get down to it, when your team's losing or your team got jobbed by a call, it all goes out the window at that point. So you want everything you want, and I've told the coaches this. I'm like, hey, he didn't make a good call on that one. What do you want me to do? Tar and feather them? I can do that. Yeah. I that's just it. You asked me before how guys get to, the championship game and that. Well, it's who manages those situations better. And so there are some consequences to guys not making good calls. And I'm not, if I don't trust them, I'm not putting them in a big game. So there are consequences. I know it's silent for most people, but it's not silent to the officials that want to move on and want to work better games. So,
yeah. And like we've said, in the discourse the last couple weeks, a lot of people have complained about that piece of it where they say, well, there's no accountability. And it's like, well, like you said, publicly tarring and feathering these guys does not help anything because it just adds fuel to the fire of people thinking that they're being the loudest on the internet or on a podcast or on the radio is going to change something, when in reality you're already taking care of this stuff and evaluating every decision they make to figure out if they're doing a good job or not. But publicly lambasting them in the media is not going to help the profile of referees in general, because they're already under so much scrutiny as it is. We don't need to give more fuel to the fire from that perspective. And we don't want to fire these guys. They need to get better. We can't just throw them away, because refereeing is not an easy thing to do.
The fact that USA Hockey has the yellow armband campaign and it's even necessary just goes to show you how crappy the whole situation is for folks trying to start reffing. You shouldn't have to warn adults at youth hockey to not yell at a 12-year-old reffing an 8-year-old game. What the hell is wrong with people?
Yeah, I gave a little bit of a presentation at our camp one of these years and past years with the Big Ten, and there's a dehumanizing of referees when it comes to, and it's every sport. You see the videos, the crazy parents, and the fights and that. And, what world would you be able to yell at a 12-year-old kid or 14-year-old kid? Because he's wronged your son or your daughter. So that is something that, whatever it takes, if the green or the yellow armbands, and I think green in Canada, right? So for anybody that doesn't know what that is, they're the first or second year referees, and there was a zero tolerance policy on that. So I think those anybody that argues any kind of a call or is disrespectful of those officials gets immediately ejected. So it's great.
I think everybody should just happen.
It should just happen. At youth level sporting events, I think it should happen.
Yeah.
And I think I see it and I can't stand it. When my son was he's a senior this year, and so I followed him all the way up and coached because I wanted to give back to the game for one, but for two is I didn't want to sit in the stands with the parents. I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
So I absolutely hated it. And I just I get into high school and and everybody knows, you know, on his team, everybody knows who I am. So any kind of a controversial call, they're all looking at me like, what was that? Was that a good call? And I just stay out of it. So you're right. It should be immediate ejection. If you argue a call. Oh, there's some referees out there in different sports that are just in it for a paycheck and have bad attitudes too. But that's not the norm. The norm is somebody wanting to make a couple extra dollars, stay involved in the game, get some exercise, and give back. Yeah. And we're abusing those people at a level that's just, it's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I've said it many times on the podcast that like one of the best things we ever did was find you guys at a bar and get to know you, because it like, you realize that it makes it so easy to realize that you guys are out there doing the best you can, trying to be fair to the game and to the teams involved. And like, obviously the players and the coaches get heated and get their own skewed views of what's going on, because coaches' livelihoods are on the line with some of this stuff, and the margins can be razor thin some years. I mean, look at the conference standings this year. It was what, 6 points from 2 to 7? Like,
yep.
That's one that changed one outcome of one game, and you go from 7th to 2nd. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, if there's two things that I wanted to get across this year to people, one is we already talked about, it's the replay, what it's called, what it's there for, and two is that the officials that are in our conference and pretty much every conference in the country, but the ones that I'm responsible for, their commitment and dedication to this game is just unbelievable, right? They are, because they're not full time, and they hear that from coaching staff sometimes and from fans, this is just your part-time job. Well, these guys have all, this does not pay enough to be your only job. And they're traveling sometimes at great lengths to get to some of the games in our conference. They're taking time away from their family and their jobs, and they do it for is what at this level is decent money. It's definitely worth their time, but their dedication, they're not doing it for the paycheck. They're doing it because they love the game. They love to be around it. They love the guys they're working with. They don't just show up, throw their bags on the ground, throw their stuff on, go out, work a game, come back and go to the bars. That's not how it works. It's a year long staying in shape, watching some of them staying in shape. But you know, trying to keep up with these guys isn't easy. And they're dedicated. They really are. And I try to mention that to our coaches. I mean, you guys probably saw it. We had one of our officials just get absolutely taken out after a goal up at Tech. You know, landed on his back, broke 3 ribs. Separated, a little bit of his shoulder, and he was out for about a month. And then his first game back was the playoffs up in Tech. So, I mean, I told the guys to put up a cone over there in the corner where he went down. But,
yeah, he went down hard.
Yeah, that was, so they're, you know, they put themselves in harm's way, and they do this because they love the game. And for anybody to say that they're not committed to this, I will take great offense to it, because they don't know what they've gone through to get to this point, and they sacrifice, and they do, and they go to Alaska, and they go up to the Sioux, right? And some, you know, some of these guys, and we go to Fairbanks, you know, so I send in the guys to Fairbanks, they all got to go up there. And so, you know, you're leaving on, you know, sometimes you're leaving on a Thursday morning, you'll get back till, you know, Sunday night late, maybe even Monday morning. I had guys, because we were in the middle of playoffs, Alaska, Fairbanks, and Anchorage were all playing. So I had a crew go up there and stay for 6 games. You know, so they went and worked the Anchorage, then they went up to Fairbanks and worked, because Stonehill was up there. They worked 2 games at Anchorage, 2 games at Fairbanks, and then came back and worked Arizona State at Anchorage again. You know, the good thing is they got to see the start of the Iditarod. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so I mean, like, they were away for like 8 days.
No.
know, so there's dedication, and the guys just don't throw their bags down. They work hard. They have to know the rules. You know, that's one of the things, you know, you have to really enjoy what you're doing, but you have to have an exemplary knowledge of the rule book, because any little situation that happens, like an awarded goal, how many times did that happen? You know, happened twice this year I know of, and the guys made the correct call both times.
Yeah.
So you got to know that stuff. Yep. So nobody's going to be there to bail you out if you don't know the rules.
And as controversial as some people think that semifinal was, I think it proves out that they did know the rules and they did call it right. And it's really a testament to, you know, how well they are doing their job, I think, because those are some tough calls to make in a tough spot. And
yeah,
they made the right call.
Yeah, it's good that you recognize that. I appreciate that. Unfortunate for Minnesota State is they were on the wrong end of a couple of really tight calls, and mm-hmm. calls are breaks, right? It's similar to a puck bouncing over a stick, you know, or going off the stanchion and coming right in front of the net,
off the goalie's head.
Yeah. Off the goalie's head, off the defenseman, and then off the goalie's head. And, you know, I mean, those are bad breaks, right? So yep. A call not going your way, you know, is a little bit of a break. And I think, you know, good teams overcome these breaks. And, you know, other teams aren't able to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, Dustin, you said it right. They were prepared. They made the calls. They knew the rules. They knew the right application of the rules. They followed the process exactly the way you're supposed to. And whether their version of it was the same as your version of it or my version of it or the coaching staff's, that is irrelevant at that point. And there is going to be judgment involved in this game. And it's not going to be the same as what you guys think, you know, and it's not going to be the same as what I think. But as long as they are in the right proper positioning and they apply the rules correctly, then that's all I'm there for. I try to give mm-hmm. these guys the materials and the information to, like, this is what we want. So every week, we get a set of anywhere between 5 and 15 clips every week that all the officials and all the coaches get that say, this is what's being called, and this is the right application of it. This is the wrong application of it. This is how we should have been calling it. So there really isn't any doubt on what we want called. So that information, along with just, you know, they staying up on the game and having good judgment, you can't get to this level, Division I level, without being a good referee. They all know when a trip is. They all know what a hook is. They just need to apply it the right way in the right situations, and not everybody's going to love the outcome on that.
Yeah, and then the same crew came back the next week, and I think all of us agreed that they called the championship game really well.
The number one thing talking in the bars with the Bemidji fans, because, you know, that's where we all went afterwards, right?
Yeah.
And you're wearing your tech stuff and you're going to have that chat with people around the bar, was one, it was an awesome hockey game that the refs didn't have. There was nothing controversial. There was no impact. They let them play. There were a couple of things that maybe could have been called both ways, but the fans in Bemidji sweaters and the fans in tech sweaters both appreciated the way that game was called. You get a little bit of late drama with the only penalty of the game. It ends up working out well in our favor and, you know, really swinging the momentum for us to hold on for the last couple of minutes there. And both fan bases go away with a fantastic experience where the reffing piece of it is just a part of the background of the game.
Yeah, it was right? in the background. That's what you want right? to see. That's perfect.
Yep. Yep. And I agree. And what really helps that is when the players play too. So a lot of times the players aren't interested in playing hockey. They're interested in other things. That's when it becomes a little more different. And that's when it looks, you know, just uneven out there, right? It looks bad. And, like, you know, all the refereeing was terrible. Well, you know, the hockey was terrible for one.
Yeah. But
that was a well-played hockey game. The atmosphere in that building was fantastic. I mean, you know, Tech took the life out of it a little bit, you know, getting ahead. But that's what they do, and it was wonderful to see. I think what gets lost, and yet not taking away anything away from the referees, there was one penalty. There was a lot of good no calls in that game, and that's what an experience and where your cream rises, is when guys don't overcall games like that. But the linesmen on that game, it wasn't as easy a game for them. There was a lot of close calls, a lot of icings, guys getting taken out. So, you know, they just did a fantastic job. I'm thrilled that it went as well as it did. I think it was a great way to cap off the CCHA season, first under my watch with the officials, and I think it couldn't have ended better.
Yeah, agreed.
So
agreed for sure.
So one more question I want to get to from the semifinal. There was a lot of concern over whether or not Logan Piedola was allowed to take the penalty shot because he wasn't on the ice. And it sounds like there's some different situations where that can happen. And there's other situations where it has to be someone on the ice. Is that true at the college level?
Yeah, well, I mean, not necessarily on the ice. The player who gets fouled is the player that takes the penalty shot. When it's a situation where there's like a covering, a puck in the crease, that is a captain's choice. So anybody that's on the roster that's not currently serving a penalty is eligible to take that.
Okay.
Now,
yep.
The backup goalies can't take it because they can't go across the red line. But yeah, anybody.
Everybody else can, sure.
So yeah, I know there was some talk about that, but that's a captain's choice. Okay. And they also, I mean, what, you know, they also get the choice of a minor penalty. So,
yep.
And in that situation, you know, 2 minutes of a 5-on-3, it wouldn't have been a no brainer to take the penalty shot at that point. So I'm sure there was some talk about that.
Yeah, there was. Sounds like there was, at least from
Joel. Yeah, Don mentioned that last night when we talked to Don.
Yeah. I haven't seen that happen too often where you take the minor penalty, but it is a penalty shot optional minor. So,
okay.
But yeah, that to answer your question, yeah, it's a captain's choice, so anybody can take it.
Okay. And then the last thing we need to get to is our Patreon question from Marvin Wilson. I think you covered some of this in our talk about replays, but I'll just throw this all out there and you can kind of tell us what maybe you haven't talked about yet. What is the procedure for an official review when the referees go to the monitor? Is it totally up to those two guys? Do they have anyone else they consult with? And is one ref the head ref that will make the decision, or does the final decision stay with the guy that made the call on the ice?
Okay, well, I'll try to answer that best I can. There is no such thing as a head ref. They're both the same. So during our regular season, there is a replay technician that is on the headset with them, and all they are there for is to, you know, slow that down, blow that up, change the angle. Do you have another angle? That kind of thing. Once we get to the playoffs, I have an official in the replay booth with them, so they can consult with them. The final decision is always made by the on-ice referees. So we don't clear all goals in our playoffs. So it's up to the challenge or a review, those kind of things. But if there is an unobserved goal where, you know, play keeps going on, the NCAA doesn't want that to go on very long. You know, I think we talked about the 2009 regional where the puck went through the net with the Air Force and Vermont.
Yeah.
And, you know, the play went on for over 6 minutes after that. So we don't want that scenario. So they're instructed to call down, have the horn go off. And that's just if it's obviously in the net, right?
Yeah, so, we saw that in a NHL game not that long ago, scored by Jake Lucchini. Michigan Tech player. So
that's I think that answered all his questions.
I think so. So the final decision kind of comes from, does that typically go to the guy that made the call because he's the one that primarily saw it? Is it, or do they both kind of?
I have both referees in the box in the replay at the same time, just because two eyes are better than four eyes are better than one. So they ultimately come up with the decision. There's been opportunities where guys have changed the other one's mind, that kind of thing, but it's their decision. The guy that usually comes out and makes the announcement is the one that made the call on the ice. So that's usually how it works, but they're both in there to make the decision together. Okay. And come out with a consensus.
Anything else you want to say to Michigan Tech or CCHA fans about anything?
You know, I mean, I'd love to see Tech make a run here. I've been saying this all along, whoever comes out of our conference, they're not your typical 16 seed. So they're going to give BC a battle, and BC is a young team, and I think they're ripe. So I would love to see, I see Blake come up big, and make that a game, that would be outstanding to see. By far, I mean, the Tech fans that were in Bemidji last weekend, they brought it. And, you know, I ran into a couple of people in around the area, and they're like, you know, like, boy, the Tech fans, they sure have a lot of energy. And I said, yeah, if you think they're going to quit throughout the entire game, you're wrong, because they're not. So they brought the energy of the, you know, kind of, Bemidji doesn't draw that great throughout the year. And for the last two games to be sellouts like they were, was just great for the game, great for the city. And the Tech fans really brought the energy level up. And it's great to see. It's great to see the passion that comes from them. I thought they had a great year. It came along at the right time, and they beat a really, really good hot team too.
Yeah.
And they just outplayed them. So
they did.
Suffocating to them. They were great, and they were legally suffocating them, which is the best thing about it, right?
Well, Marco, since you make the big bucks as the director of officiating, if you'd like to help send one of the misfits to Providence, we're fundraising right now for the low price of $330.
Yesterday, you talked to the big bucks guy, so if he goes, they give you money. I don't know what I can do for you guys. So
all right, I'll send the link to Perry to send to both of you then. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we'll get right on that.
All right.
1 minute remaining in the podcast.
Well, that should do it for this week's episode of the Chasing McNaughton podcast. I don't know where I am here. Please check out our Patreon and join by visiting patreon.com/tech hockey guide. We've got much of different levels that get you different benefits. This week, you get basically really long versions of all these podcasts that we're doing. As soon as we wrap up with this, we'll be recording with the guys from BC at ContiCast. Let's see. Follow us on Twitter at ChasingMacPod and at Tech Hockey Guide. You can submit questions through Twitter, Facebook, and our Patreon page. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Fibke Dental in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, Arcadia Insurance servicing the Midwest and more, Livonia, and finally, Livonia Technical Services. Finally, thanks to the thank you notes for all the bumpers in this week's episode. If you like what you hear, check them out at thethankyounotes.bandcamp.com.
You've been listening to the Chasing McNaughton podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA.